Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hello, everyone. Today, I'm joined by Deborah Keevan, publisher, author, and founder of Highlander Press. Deborah has spent her life surrounded by books, but more importantly, helping others find their voice and turn their ideas into something meaningful and lasting. In this conversation, I want to explore with Deborah what really holds people back from writing a book, why clarity matters more than we think, and how a book can become one of the most powerful tools for building relationships in business. So welcome to the show, Deborah.
Oh, Janice, I've been looking forward to our conversation. Thank you for having me.
Oh, really? Oh, thank you. I feel like I want to call you Deborah, but I see Debbie in some of your things. So do I have to be in a special group to call you Debbie? Or
we're friends. You can call me Debbie.
But do you prefer that or does it matter?
I go by Deborah or Debbie, just not Deb.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's like me. Don't ever call me Janet because that's not my name. And when someone calls me Janet, it's like they haven't listened.
Yes.
So yeah, Jan or Janice, but not Janet, please. Anyway, so, okay, I want to dig right into, I go back because I know you've loved books since you were 4 years old. Do you remember when you first realized that books could actually shape a life or a career?
Oh my goodness. That was a very late in life landing, I would say is the word I would use because I'm the first person in my family to go to college, and I was very much the outlier. Mm-hmm. I was a quiet kid by necessity. My younger brother was born with pretty significant health issues, and my mother wanted the house to be quiet. And I was a pretty rambunctious tomboy kid with a lot of energy, and I just channeled it into reading. But it never occurred to me that I could make a living and have a life that involved books. And I say, I have the greatest, and I can't even call it a job. I have the greatest day-to-day lived experience because I get to play with books all day long.
Isn't that fantastic when you can do what you love and get paid for it? Fantastic. That's great. You often say that people don't struggle with writing. They struggle with knowing what they want to say. What do you mean by that?
Well, so it's interesting. I've had a lot of people say, I'm not a writer.
I say that. I say I'm a talker, not a writer.
Yeah. And I'm going to give you a great big permission slip, Janice.
Okay.
You have a recording device on your phone.
Yeah.
Speak your story. Speak your wisdom. Because a lot of people feel stuck when it comes to putting pen to paper or fingers to keyboard. And Brené Brown calls those art scars. We learned at some point in our lives that our creation wasn't perfect and it slowed us down. And it, in many cases, stopped us altogether. Writing is one of the skills that is the easiest because it's just simply the act of doing it. And with tools today, you can record and have it transcribed, and then you have a rough draft. And with a rough draft, you can create magic.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, it is. It's true that with the tools we have today, there's so much, it makes it so much faster and easier. It's totally true. Okay. Thinking about that. Okay. What are some of the common ways that you see people get stuck when they're trying to write a book?
I'll say analysis paralysis. And I'm a great example of this. I wrote my first novel and the chapter one is chef's kiss. It's fantastic. And I kept revising it, And I think we often get into that phase where we have the fraud factor or the little gremlin on our shoulders telling us, you know, it's all been said before and who's going to read this and why are you spending this time and energy to do all of this? And that's just fear. It's our egos trying to keep us safe. But the truth of it is we each have our lived experience that is unique to us only. And when we share our stories, we're actually lighting a lantern and showing other people the way that they may not have considered before. And it gives others the permission to be themselves and share their stories.
So let's just, I'm just going to interject myself here from my questions and ask you. So I know you've written a book called, I love the name of your book, Shelf Life. I love that. Shelf Life, A Field Guide to Long-Term Author Success. So that book is helping would-be authors on their journey of writing, I'm assuming, and the
It's
things to do
actually, yeah,
after,
it's,
right? It's the
yeah.
things to do after they've written the book,
Yeah,
right?
after they've published, actually.
Right. Okay. And we'll come back to that.
Sure.
But do you mostly, so your company, Highlander Press, do you publish mostly nonfiction books or a bit of fiction and nonfiction or like business books? What is there a pattern to what you publish,
In the
what your
beginning,
specialty is?
yeah. In the beginning, we published primarily nonfiction, typically in the self-help slash memoir business book, thought leader, even lead gen books, right? But over time, because I have a foot in both fiction and nonfiction
You said,
worlds, we actually had our largest publishing class of fiction start 2 years ago. And so right now we're a 50-50. So it's about, yeah, I would say 50-50 right now. And I love having the breadth because our authors get to know each other. And so fiction writers are getting to learn from nonfiction writers and vice versa.
So you do, you call it the Author Momentum Circle. Is that your sort of group program?
Yeah, so that's after. So we have two programs. One is called the Ink Program, and that's our publishing arm.
Which I was going to
Any,
ask you about as well after. Okay, I have a
yeah, so
question.
let's talk about the author Momentum Circle. That's for authors who've published a book, had a launch, successful or not, and we can also talk about what makes a successful launch. And they don't know what to do next. And so they don't do anything. I call it ghosting their books. So for that circle is intended for fiction and nonfiction authors,
To support them in
support
such a way.
and we look at what's working, what are their goals just for quarter, like by quarter, what are your goals?
Well, and so that's interesting because I do know a woman here in British Columbia who's had a successful business for many years helping authors write their books. But she seems to, I think she's had group programs too. But one of the things I remember, I didn't take her program, but I know some people who have. And one of the things in the promo and everything that I've seen is, and in other people's actually, that I've noticed is that writing the book is like just the beginning. It's like, right? It's how do you promote it? What are you doing to do that? What do you want it to do? Is it just a, it's like a business card, or is it, you know, more than that? So there's, it's important to know what you want, but it's also important to know how to do all of this stuff, how to get it to the that pretend, I call it the pretend bestseller list, because it's like getting everybody to vote for you, and you know, it's just but it does work, and it helps people with their what their
Their
prowess about it.
visibility.
Yeah,
Yeah,
visibility,
visibility.
but
Yeah.
also their feelings about, you know, having been successful in doing what they're doing, of course. So, okay. So lack of clarity can affect the book, but it can also affect how someone shows up in their business or communicates with others. So all of that, like the after piece, it's like some people I've even noticed won't even mention their book. You know,
Yeah.
so can you talk about some of that?
Yeah. Can we back up one
Yes,
thing just to say
absolutely.
you hit on a really important point, and then I'll come back and I will certainly answer your question. Writing is the first step of five. So there's the writing, which most people really focus on. time, talent, energy. They focus on that writing, which is important because you can't do the second step if you haven't done the first. And the second step is editing. And editing, I say, is like giving Michelangelo a piece of raw marble. The manuscript, the rough draft, is that marble. And then you sculpt it into something worth publishing. Then the third step is actually the publishing part. The fourth step is the launch part. And then the fifth step is the long tail of post-marketing, post-launch marketing.
Sorry, my husband called just when I was thinking of what you were saying and trying to stop the phone from ringing. Okay, so what was the second step? That's where I got stuck.
Editing.
Oh, right. Okay. So, and that's a whole story in itself for me because I know there's, when I think of editing, I think of getting the red pen out and doing the grammar check and so on. But that's not what editing, that's one part of editing, I understand, but there's other parts to editing. And so is it, is like, do you edit people's books or do you have an editor?
Absolutely,
Okay,
we
you do it.
edit.
No, but you, do you, are you an editor as
I
well?
do the developmental editing,
Okay, tell me
which
what that
is,
is, because that's the part that,
So developmental editing, if you think about how does a story hang together, how does it work in totality? Where is the arc of the story? And there's arcs in nonfiction as well as fiction, and then there's a total book arc, and how can we make it stronger? So it's really the scaffolding and the way that the book works.
Oh, I like that analogy. That's great.
And then there's the copy editing, which is the traditional red pen. It's also called line editing, which is basically a line by line, making sure that the strong word choices and we don't have the word very and a bunch of other things. And then the last major part of editing happens after the book is laid out, and that's called proofreading. And that's somebody who's got eagle eyes, and I have the most incredible proofreader. She is extraordinary. And she, I would, you never would want me to proofread your book. So those are the three
So
major
the
types of
proofreading
editing.
is more about what the oh, you put the word in the wrong place or you missed a word here or you the it's
Yeah,
that
miss
kind
the
of
word
thing.
here. It could be even things stylistic, like a one that happens very often when a book is laid out is you might have straight quote marks and sometimes curly quote marks.
Oh,
And
wow.
so going back and like making sure that
They're all the
they're all
same.
the same.
Oh,
And the
my God.
reason is, even though readers might not catch it consciously, their subconscious is catching it. And so all of those little things. Here's one thing that editing is not. It is not about perfection.
Oh, okay.
It's about excellence. And there's a big difference.
Oh, that's cool. It's not about. Okay, what's the difference?
So I'll share perfection, my version of what I mean by perfection. So you know the carpets, the Persian carpets that are hundreds of thousands of dollars. The people who make those are experts at carving or creating those, weaving those. They actually introduce an error into every single one because their belief that only God, the universe source, is perfect.
That's
And
interesting.
almost every book that you read, you can find a mistake.
Okay,
And
interesting.
that's so we're not going for a lot of mistakes, but there may be one in there.
No,
And I'm
that's good.
okay with that. I had to get okay with that because I am a recovering perfectionist.
Well, I think I am too in some ways, and I was playing around with recording the intro to this ahead of time. And because I don't like to read a big long thing when someone's sitting there, but that's why I just read a short one because I did this thing and I couldn't get over this one word. It kept, it, I'll tell you what the word was. The word was irreverent and I couldn't say it. And because I was reading from your thing. And so I just let it go because it is, that's the way it was, you know, but I don't know if I'm going to use that anyway. So it's just one of those things. But anyway, all right. So do you remember my question?
Yes, it was about clarity.
Yes.
So I think clarity comes in a number of ways when someone writes a book. I think number one, they get clear about their value.
Okay.
And they get clear about their lived experience because whether they're writing a book, business book, or a nonfiction book, their story is in there because they have a different view. And very often I'll hear that not only are they clearer, they have more confidence because they're like, wow, I did do that. And seeing it in black and white and seeing that they stuck with it and wrote a book is pretty empowering.
Yeah, for
So
sure.
I think that that helps them as an author be clear with who's their ideal client, because their ideal client is also then their ideal reader. And when they're clear about that, it's easier to communicate. And then it's easier for the ideal client to self-select.
Yeah, I just interviewed a woman out of Australia, and she talks about storytelling and how using storytelling in your speeches or in your work that you do as it makes such a difference. And I was just thinking that even when I'm writing like a newsletter, if I can add a story in there to go with what I'm talking about, it does make it better. People respond to it in a way that they don't if you just give them the facts, right? But when if I were doing that in a book, I guess sometimes I might think, oh, that's too personal. They don't need to know that. Or maybe that's too long a story or whatever. So I suppose do you find that you have to encourage people to add a story here and add a story there, or you get some of those that they can't stop and then it's too many?
Yes, 100% both
Yeah.
ways.
Okay. Yeah.
And what I've also found is, and I again, I'll share a story.
Sure.
We had an author who came to me, and she had a book, and we offered her a publishing contract, and she turned in her final manuscript. It was exactly 100 pages, and she was very proud of that fact. And chapter two was 50 of those pages.
Oh,
It was the core of her story. And so I had a conversation with her and I said, look, the rest of the 50 pages are great, but I think that's a different book that you can write at a different time. Your story right now is this chapter two.
wow.
And let's blow it out. And the book title of the book is called The Gift of Loss. And it was a story of how she completely transformed her life after her husband was very suddenly and dramatically killed in a car accident when she had three very young children. And she was unhealthy and I mean, just completely flipped her story. But digging back through that was very painful. And so
Yes.
I ha also have the unique skill that I can look at a story or hear a story and say, there's something that you're not saying, and it's right here, and let's blow this out a little bit. And what happens when that happens, when people are
Yeah.
skimming over the tough stuff?
Yeah.
That's the juicy stuff. And you hit on a very important point, which is it's too personal. And so I always say there's personal and then there's private, and they're two very different things. And so what may be private to me may be personal to you. It could be very different. So that's an individual choice. And you get to decide what's private and what you're willing to share.
Right. But so this woman though wrote the 50 pages about that episode in her life, and yet she didn't see that that was the story at first.
She definitely didn't.
Yeah.
And she was resistant
Yeah.
initially.
And yet
And
she'd written 50 pages about it.
right.
Yeah.
But it was very surfacey.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think it ended up
Yeah.
being about 170 pages
Sure.
once we were all done.
Yeah.
And she said to me afterwards, I really didn't want to do this, but it
Yes.
was the most beneficial thing I've done for myself because it enabled me to, A, feel all the feelings again.
Yeah.
and realize how far I'd come, how much more healing I was, I how this process was, and then I can appreciate my resilience. I can appreciate how I showed up for my children. I can appreciate the choices I've made.
So this next question that I was going to ask you, I think you've already answered some of it, but I want to give you a chance to answer it. This kind of makes, okay, you I've read somewhere that you believe in magic, manifestation, and intuition. How have those played a role in the way you guide authors or even your own guide your own journey? And I think you just answered that question, didn't you? So beautifully with that example.
Well, thank
Is there
you.
another one in the in there?
I do believe in magic. It's funny, I was as a kid very intuitive, and I pushed it away because it didn't fit how I was growing up and the structure of our family. And once I leaned into it was almost like Dorothy and the magic red slippers, right? I had this power that I was like, whoa. And so what I've discovered about myself is I'm an excellent listener and I can really hear. My ears will burn actually when someone's saying something that I'm like, oh, we need to go back and dig into that. And so like when we do VIP sessions and I'm helping somebody define the scaffolding before they've written a word, I re-record those sessions because sometimes I don't even know what I'm saying. It just flows through me because I'm so connected.
I love it.
Yeah.
I
And
know
that
that.
I think is magic.
Well, I do too, because I feel that I am intuitive. And when I'm talking to people, whether it's on a microphone or whether it's just having a conversation with someone, I tend to be able to dig deeper than one might normally think. I always have this joke that, and I've said this before on air as well, that my husband can go and play golf with somebody that he's never met before and come back and tell me that he met this really nice couple from Australia. And I'll say, oh, where are they from in Australia? How many, what are, blah, 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 blah. And I'll ask a million questions. He says, Janice, I was just playing golf with them. But you were with 4 hours, you were with them,
Right.
right? And yet
Yeah.
I can talk to someone in the grocery store for 5 minutes and find out more about them than he could in 4 hours. So it's just an it's I think it's a gift, I think, to be able to and to know, I think, I guess the bigger gift is to be able to know when to dig in and when not to, right?
Yes, 100% really listening to our guts or that intuition that comes because if we're attuned to it, it's there available all the time.
And I'm just thinking that we all talk about knowing who our audience is and who we attract in terms of the work that we do, and I think with finding a publisher for your book, so you've decided you want to write a book, but maybe that's as much as far as you've gotten, and now you're shopping for someone to help you. So, what would you say they're going to see or read between the lines when they look at your website and your LinkedIn profile and whatever, and know whether you're the right person for them, and vice versa, because once you've had the
Yeah.
conversation.
So as a publisher, we're looking for someone who has at least a rough draft. So they've got a rough draft, they'll send it to us, some of it. It'll be an excerpt, and we 100% of the time give feedback on that excerpt. I do it for two reasons. One is I want them to see how we would be as an editor. And how our relationship to their work. I also do it and provide the feedback on a Zoom call because I want to see how they
Let me see
receive the
them.
feedback. Because for me, I could publish 300, 400, 500 books a year. But for me, being aligned energetically means that we can go farther, faster together. And so I would much rather limit the number of books we're publishing every year to make sure that they're the books that are best aligned with for both sides.
That makes so much sense. All right, I'm going to come back to something you alluded to earlier, that your ink framework. Can you walk us through how I think it's intention, navigation, and knowledge support both the writing process and the person behind it?
Thank you for asking. Our ink program is something that I created, 5 years ago now. Oh my gosh, 5 years ago. And it was came from this understanding that a lot of emphasis is placed on the writing part of the process. And so many people don't understand what happens once the writing is done. And so it was created because I kept having the same conversations over and over. And I realized, A, authors need community so they can support each other and create this lovely, wonderful, supportive, and encouraging community. And it was everyone's hearing the same thing. So these classes were initially taught live, which limited the number of classes I could hold a year. They were 6 months, and it happened alongside the editing and publishing process. So people who we'd offer a contract to would go into a cohort. That cohort has now expanded to be a year-long program where the classes are pre-recorded. And then we still have live sessions where they get to build the community and ask questions. And so it enables people to come in all year long and pick up where they're starting. And honestly, people love it because they understand what's happening while it's happening, and they understand the theory behind it. It's not to be, I want them to become publishers, but I want them to understand when we're talking about their cover, why I'm going to be very particular about certain things depending upon who their audiences are.
Yeah, the little things that I don't even think about. Yeah, that's so true. And first impressions are the cover, is the cover. Yeah, in that instance. Okay. How does writing a book change the way someone sees themselves and their voice? I'm sure you
We
must
touched on
see,
this. Yeah, we've touched
the
on this a little bit.
transformation.
And
Yeah, with the girl that, the woman that, yeah.
but I even think I've seen it time and time again. We've published thus far since officially launching as Highlander Press. We've published 76 books. So in 6 years, it's pretty
It's
good.
a lot.
I've seen it consistently that people like stand a little taller. They feel more confident. They show up differently. And if you think about if you meet an author, right, you kind of have this, I have this feeling when I meet an author, it's like they've done something really cool. Books are still important in our society.
No, I love books and I don't read enough.
There's never enough time to
Well,
read.
can we talk about that a little bit? Because I did something that I haven't done for a very long time. I don't read fiction. I never have time. So if I'm my sort of my nighttime routine when I get into bed is to do a crossword puzzle because I love doing crossword puzzles and maybe just read some junk food reading like my People magazine because I'm a pop culture nerd and I love Jeopardy, so those always help with Jeopardy questions. Anyway, but I notice new books that come out and books that are made into movies and who's optioned this book now and so on. And we're going away for a week and I thought, maybe I'll get a book and take a book away with me because I'll have time to read. What shall I get? Right. And I wanted a real book. Like I didn't want to do it on my Kindle or anything. I can't do that. I have to have the book. So I see on Instagram these people that say, oh, here's my five top books so far this year. Like they've read 35 books and it's only the end of March. And I'm like, you know, anyway. So I settled on one and my sister reads. And so I talked to her about it as well. And she says, well, I think you'd like this book. And I said, I, you know, I'm so nervous about buying a book because if I don't like it in the first five pages, I'm doomed, right? But what's gonna, anyway, long story short, I settled on the big book of the time, and that is The Correspondent.
Oh, yes. I have not read that yet,
Okay.
but it
So
is on my to read pile, which is a teetering pile
I'm
of.
sure because you're a reader. But anyway, I settled on that book and I actually started reading it last night and I'm already intrigued. So that's a good
Ooh.
sign. And I think it's funny because where did I read this? Oh, I don't remember, but I noticed somewhere somebody said, so Jane Fonda has optioned this book. It's in, right?
Yes.
But it wasn't on Oprah's book list and it wasn't on Reese Witherspoon's book list, but it was Katie Couric's. And then I started to see, okay, so it's definitely my generation that needs to read it because the woman in the book is 72 or 73. So that's one thing. So I thought, okay, I think I'll probably like it. It was a lot to think about because when you don't read very often, you don't want to waste your time on something,
Right.
right? So I want to know what you're reading.
Oh gosh. Right now I am finishing up Kate. I love historical fiction. That's what
Okay.
I write in fiction
Yes.
and that's what I love reading. I'm finishing up Kate Quinn's The Briar Club, which is the story of it's kind of told from the story of a perspective of the house, the Briarwood House in Washington, D.C., in the era of McCarthy. And it's
Oh.
full of women who are in different careers. One works for the National Archives, one is an artist, and someone else works for a senator. So they all have these different jobs. And it's the story of these women who have come from disparate backgrounds and how they get tangled up in. The Red Scare.
Politics?
Yeah, the Red
Yeah.
Scare.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's quite good. I like Kate Quinn. She wrote The Rose Code. If I were to give you a recommendation for a book that I just thought was, I'll give you two. One is an older book called The Dutch House by Ann Patchett.
Oh, see, Ann Patchett's mentioned in this book.
Ooh.
Yes.
Yeah, the
Okay.
Dutch House is one of the most unique
Interesting.
stories I've ever read, and it's told. So the premise is a man buys a house for his family that this Dutch colonial that's completely furnished down to the toothbrushes and hairbrushes of the previous residents. They just
Ooh.
move in lock, stock, and barrel.
Ooh, that's creepy.
Yeah, so it's a, but it's a, it's such a
Okay.
good book. And then one that I read last year that is also being made into a film is called Remarkably Bright Creatures.
Oh, I don't think I've heard of that one.
Shelby Van Pelt, it's her first novel and it
Okay.
is luminous.
Oh, okay. I'll check those both out. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, I hope this is a good sign that I'm getting back into reading because, you know, it just doesn't happen. So I listen to a lot of podcasts, but I
Yeah.
don't read a lot. So yeah, and I love books though. I mean, I've always got books beside my bed. I just never get to them.
Right.
And it's funny, I have a 6.5-year-old granddaughter. And she's in grade one, and she's struggling a little bit with reading. And I go, she said, "I can't read, Grandma." And I said, "Oh, you can. I've seen you read. You've read words to me in a little book." I said, "If you want, you know, I can help you sometime. I did teach grade one at some point in my life." I said, "I could help you. You know, we could practice together." No, she said, "I'm not interested." Yeah, so we'll come back around to that one,
Yeah, for sure. What we
but.
did with my son, who struggled, was we did audiobooks and we did them
Yes,
to and
she's
from
doing that too.
school.
Okay.
And he's an auditory learner and it was incredible the
The
shift. And he's
difference.
still a lifelong reader now,
Yeah.
but you've got to hit them where they are
That's
and
right.
hook them.
Yeah, I know exactly. So it's just so funny. Anyway, okay, last question around the books for someone listening who has a story or an idea but hasn't started, what's their first step?
Making the decision to do it and then carving out regular writing time. And it doesn't have to be a huge amount of time, but what does happen, and I say this to everyone who asks me this question, put 30 minutes on your calendar when you're feeling most creative. For most people, it's
The
right when they
morning.
wake up,
Yeah.
before they've done anything else. Maybe they brew a cup of coffee, sit down, 30 minutes. Does not have to be long. and write.
French press coffee.
Yes, of course, French press coffee.
I don't even drink coffee, so it doesn't even, I don't even relate, but I love that
What the
French
heck?
press anyway. Yeah, that's so funny.
But yeah, just, and then the thing is after that, go for a walk or exercise, because what happens is the endorphins that get released after you exercise reinforces your desire to be at your writing desk.
Ooh, smart woman, smart woman. So when you're not reading or helping others write their books, I know you've done one of the trails in, or the Camino de Santiago trail
Yes.
in Spain. That must have been amazing.
Yes, it really, it was transformative. I
Was
did
it?
it over four trips.
Okay.
So I broke it into sections, and
Okay.
it was each leg of that trip, I didn't bring the same person home with me. I
Oh.
in terms of the shedding and the contemplative time. And at the first leg that I did, I had come out of a marriage where I had been abused. My kids were both heading off to college. It was a real time of reflection. What stories, what can I learn from this experience? How can I heal? And I came back from that trip thinking, I have too much stuff. I'm holding on to emotional baggage. I'm holding on to physical things. And it was really the start of a completely transformative experience in my life. It was also the first time that the only decision I had to make every day was
Was
what
for
I'm
you.
having for lunch. That was it.
So when you went on the, particularly the first leg, were you with other people? But when you walked, you, is it silence? Is it in silence?
Sometimes it's in silence. I went with a small group of other women, with a very dear friend of mine who's out of the UK. And so she kind of pulled us all together. And I slept in a room with a woman I had never met before. You get to know people very
Yes.
much on a different level.
Yeah.
There's no artifice, there's no
Right.
pretense. Some days it was quiet. I will say, I never once put my earbuds in. I listen to nature and the sound of birds, and you're walking through rural Spain in places that
Yeah.
you would otherwise never see,
Right.
you
Right.
know, and it was just a gift.
So, have you written a book about this yet?
I have not. I've written some essays and I've
Okay.
definitely done some reflective work, but I have not written a book about this yet. And I really ought to, because what it also did was it brought me back to my intuition in a big way. And one of the coolest things that came out of that 8 years was me
Experience, yeah.
healing
Yes.
and getting clear that I was very happy not being married. I was very happy on my own. And I also knew that somebody that had already been in my life was going to come back. I just didn't know who or when.
Has that happened?
It has. And I am remarried very happily to the
Someone you
love
knew
of
in
my
high
life,
school.
somebody I met when I was 16 years old.
God, that story, it's, I hear that story so often.
Yeah.
Were
And
you?
one of the coolest part, I started having dream. We hadn't seen each other in 30. So we had been together, broken up, been together, were engaged, broke up.
Oh, really?
So
Okay.
31 years had gone by, not a peep, no word, nothing. I started having these really random dreams about him, like really vivid. And I was talking to a friend of mine and she said, "Well, what do you think that is?" I'm like, I really don't know. I don't know what it is." And she's like, "Let's do a meditation together." Does a meditation with me. I come out and I say, "I'm supposed to write him a letter." I had no idea where he was living. I had no idea his life situation. So I just wrote a letter of gratitude, 4 pages of
Yeah.
what a great boyfriend he had been, how much I loved his family. His family was my family,
Yeah.
and just gratitude. And, you know, I'm just reaching out across time and space just to say
Yeah.
that I wanted to let you know how much I'm grateful for you. He had been meditating
Oh my
on
God.
me when I like 4 o'clock in the morning when I guess these dreams were happening. I don't even know.
Yeah.
But he got my letter and he said it was like an out of
Well,
body experience.
wait. How did you find him?
He's not on social media at all and never
Okay.
has been. And, over time I occasionally, Google,
Yeah.
not
Yeah.
never found him, never found him.
Okay.
And so I Googled him that day. I remember it was June 15th, 2021. And I found him. I found his address. I didn't know if he was still living there, but I'm
Yeah.
like, I'm gonna write a letter and I'm gonna send
Oh,
it.
okay.
And if it's meant to do something, it will.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, it won't.
Yeah. And he phoned you or whatever.
We started writing letters back and forth
Oh
for
my
about
God, how
6 weeks.
romantic.
And it was just getting to rediscover who we were now
Yeah.
as, adult,
Of
grown
course. Yeah.
people. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he came to from New Jersey to where I live in Baltimore just for a weekend, had it set up in a different room, like we're friends, and we have been together ever since.
Oh
It
my
has
goodness.
just,
What a
he's just,
beautiful story.
yeah. So magic can happen.
And but your intuition, like boom. Wow, that's amazing. Anyway, just I love that story. Thank you for
Thank you.
sharing that. I love
Thank
it.
you.
Okay, so I think it's time to wrap up, and I could talk to you for a long time because I'm fascinated. But what a thoughtful and inspiring conversation. I love your idea of how you talked about writing the book and everything else that goes along with it. It's not a task to complete, but it's a way to create connection, clarity, and impact. So thanks for sharing your insights and for the work you do in helping others bring their stories to life. And how can somebody find you who listens to this podcast?
The best way to find me is on Substack.
Oh, okay.
I have a Substack called Storytell Her,
Oh, right. Okay.
and it is it's full of stories. It's full of stories about writing. It's full of stories about other authors. It's just full of stories that can help people at any stage, whether they're thinking about writing a book, they've published a book, and they're not sure what to do. It's just full of stories, and I've kept it free of charge that people subscribe, but free of charge, and I'm having so much fun sharing stories on there that I will.
Well, that's good. I haven't made too much. I ventured over there a little bit, but not a lot. So I will go over and check that out. They can also find you, I'm sure, at Highland Press.
Highlander Press
Highland,
Books,
sorry,
yeah,
Highlander
yep,
Press Books. And I'll put that in the show notes as well. And of
yeah.
course, on LinkedIn, I'm guessing as
Absolutely.
well. Okay. Well, thank you again. And to my audience, remember, this is fascinating. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And we'll explore the opportunity to, or the possibility of writing a book yourself if you haven't already, or another one, and check Deborah out at Highlander Press. So remember to stay connected and be remembered. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.